I'm recording again.
Thanks, last.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the Board Game Point of View. We are a group dedicated to the betterment of all people under the banner of tabletop gaming, and also a very proud member of the Dice Tower Network. My name is Adam. I'm your moderator tonight. I'm joined by Steven this evening.
Sup, y'all.
And Seth.
Severa.
Don't give away your last name. Stalkers.
That's not my last name. That's just my intro.
Yeah, that wasn't his last name at all.
I like it.
Yeah, jeez, what are you talking about? All right, well, let's get into this podcast.
We have an episode chocked full of board game information and whatnot. So I think we're just going to dive right in.
Actually, first, we need to go to court.
But first, I have a feeling that this episode is just going to be full of amazing humor.
Most likely.
And mediocre games. That's unlike most of our podcasts.
Well, at least something's going to be amazing.
My winning personality.
Perfect. That was literally the most perfect segment we've ever recorded.
I think so. Let's see.
Wow, that just killed it. We had a flow going. Just because it's Steve. Oh, I was going to say Steven has gone. He left as soon as I started explaining
I thought about it. As soon as he went, point of view.
That's the kicker. That's the important part.
I love that stuff. Flashback. You know the last thing we did that was that cute and adorable?
Slept in bed together? Wait. No, not that. Okay. Give me another chance.
So you know this is the third thing that we did that was that that was that cute and adorable. Beeple, so that's what.
Oh, that's
Beeple.
True.
And I received nothing but hate. I'm still waiting for it to catch on, you know?
So what's happening in our lives? Anything fun, interesting, exciting?
Yeah. My entire life is just a whirlwind of excitement right now.
Okay. I believe it.
But that's old news, so we can't talk about it.
Talk about maybe the most monotonous part of your day. The doldrum portion.
Dude, recording this podcast is the most monotonous thing for me.
Oh,
shots fired at us. Anyways, here's my quick update. I got a job today.
Yo,
finally.
Nice.
Wow, just today. Okay.
Ouch.
Whoa.
What are you doing?
Well, I was, Adam, I was waiting until my long trip to North Carolina was over with.
Which it's been a couple weeks, to be fair, so still a good burn from Adam.
I applied like a week ago, so it was only like 1 week.
So, a mediocre burn from Adam.
I am actually round two of barista-ing.
Nice.
There's that.
Starbucks.
No.
City Brew.
It's called La Barista. It's actually...
Dude, you're a Spanish barista?
No. It's actually a coffee kiosk chain in town.
Oh.
And a kiosk is something that I've never done before, and it seemed like it would be kind of fun. I'm actually contemplating working part-time there at the kiosk, and then also applying to work part-time at another coffee shop in town.
Starbucks.
It's called
El Barista.
It's called The Poor House, and it's the only specialty coffee place in town. So at the kiosk, I would get my fast-paced crazy latte action down, and then I would go over to The Poor House and rock the old Chemex and all that stuff. So, and then in the meantime, I'm just studying up on tests and crap so I can go to school at some point. It's great. It's great.
Nah, dude, that's legitimately awesome. Dude, I also got a job.
Wait.
That was a long time ago, but I don't know if I ever mentioned it.
I don't know if you did.
I was like, but I'm definitely in North Dakota working on software for the government. And that's all I can say about
it. I'm a mindless government drone. Oh.
Well, one of those things is true. And you know which one it is.
Mindless?
Okay, you. Whenever I say that, you just don't actually respond. It's implied. Always. 100% of the time, all right?
I had to stop on your joke, okay? No.
Oh. Well, that's all I had. Okay.
Well, I spent a week in California.
Yeah.
I took a week off of work, which I've never done before. And it was really nice. Just me and the wife.
Wait. That's awesome. Yeah. But you've never taken a week off of work ever.
No.
From any job.
Nope. No, this is.
You're such a hardworking individual.
Well, to be fair,
this is the first time.
You've taken close to a week off of work, right? Because, I mean, we went to Origins, and that was at least 3 or 4 days,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We did, but I put in my 40 hours prior to leaving, so it was.
Well,
wow,
it was.
He's a maniac.
Overachiever.
Tara and I went to visit my sister in Irvine. We did the Disneyland thing for a day and got to ride Star Tours and check out some of the new stuff that they've updated since the last time I had been. Went to a Dodgers game, which is
that part's less awesome, well, but
yeah, pretty lame.
Still
but
cool.
Keep going.
Yeah.
You should end on like the highlights.
Okay. Well, the stadium is huge. It's the largest stadium.
No, okay. I'm not.
Okay. Well, we'll move past the Dodgers and
move on to the Clippers.
Now we finish it out with the Vineyard National Conference, so leadership from around the U.S. getting together, a few thousand people to talk about God and whatnot. So it was good.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Did you play miniature golf?
I was thinking about it because we were very close to a miniature golf course. However, mm-hmm. Tara wanted to take a nap that afternoon instead, so, which was good.
You could play by yourself.
I could, but I was also
in the rain.
Tired. So I don't get to take naps that often either. So it was nice. It was nice.
Fair. I played miniature golf 2 weeks
ago.
Yeah, got third place.
Out of three,
how many people were playing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Five. So I was right in the middle.
There you go. Dude, I played miniature golf 2 years ago.
Okay, that doesn't count. The statute of limitations
is notwithstanding.
Well said.
Thank you.
I
don't know what it means, but I thought it sounded
cool.
Yeah,
me either. Sustained.
Yes!
I object.
So
no, I already sustained it. You can't object after you can object before, and then I can either sustain or deny.
Dude,
but
let's get a response from the plaintiff.
We don't have a plaintiff. We've got judge, jury, and executioner.
Wait. Is
you're the executioner.
Sweet.
And you're on trial.
Oh.
Is the problem. I'm the judge, clearly, because I said sustained, and no one else can say that.
Sustained. I hold you in contempt.
Oh, you're holding me in contempt
to
the court?
Tables have turned.
Well, we don't That's something you can do, so well done. I'm playing that card.
Thank you.
Moving on. It is still award season. We're in month two of just board game awards galore. The Spiel awards have been doled out, and not surprisingly, King Domino winning game of the year.
Hey-o.
And Exit actually winning Connoisseur Game of the Year over Terraforming Mars.
Which is pretty messed up, actually.
I don't think we've played Exit, but it must have been good.
Well, I talked to someone who has played it.
Okay.
And they also think Terraforming Mars should have won.
Really?
For one specific reason, which is, I don't know if we mentioned this on the last cast, but the Exit games are a one-time play, like disposable game, essentially.
That's true.
Where after you make the decisions, you're ripping up cards,
right,
and then you can't play it again.
Yeah.
So almost like a legacy game that just doesn't last nearly as long.
Exactly.
As a legacy game.
You do once. Which, I feel like that should knock it out of being Game of the Year, you know? It's a one-time play. And I feel like most games of the year should be games that you can play over and over and still enjoy. So that's kind of tough for me.
Yeah. Well, the Game of the Year, I think, has a contract to show up in, like, all the toy stores and grocery stores and everything in Germany. So if you can win a Game of the Year award, I mean, you're actually pushing quite a few of your games into the market. So it is kind of a big deal,
yeah,
but it was a little surprising. Exit winning Connoisseur Game.
Yeah.
I am curious.
Yeah.
I am curious if Exit would have better accessibility for those who are just like walking through a toy store,
mm-hmm,
or a game shop or whatever it may be. Because, I mean, if you see a game and you see like the cover of Exit and whatever, and then you read about it,
right.
I mean, everyone's in a froth over these escape rooms lately.
Mm-hmm. But it's the Kennerspiel. It's the Connoisseur Game of the Year.
No, I agree with you, Seth. And I would imagine that Exit probably sells maybe a little bit better than Terraforming Mars anyway.
So you're telling me it was rigged.
It's a conspiracy.
As is everything.
So true. Why can't be mad about this.
Right. Well, the Dice Tower handed out their awards for 2016 as well, recently. And
we won Best Podcast.
What? No. No? No, we
did not.
Spoiler.
No.
These are for actual board games. And I think we're just going to dive right in for those that haven't heard. Best Game of the Year from the Dice Tower Awards. I think there's going to be no surprise here, but Scythe taking that honor.
We all know the Dice Tower's tastes.
It's rigged as well, right?
Well, okay, I wasn't going to say it because we're on their podcast network, but yes.
Just for clarification, everything is rigged except the Dice Tower, because we're on it.
Right, right. No, but Tom Vassell.
Yeah, he's a stand-up guy.
Never told a lie in his life.
Yep.
Scythe also winning Best Artwork of the Year.
Ayo.
And no surprise there.
Which, again, it was artwork before the game, so does that fare? I don't think so. Moving on.
Well, I want to talk about the lineup of Game of the Year nominees. The Dice Tower had quite a few. Terraforming Mars was amongst them. Star Wars Rebellion, Mechs vs. Minions, Inish, Great Western Trail, A Feast for Odin, Cry Havoc, Captain Sonar, and Adrenaline.
Yeah, no, that's a tough lineup.
It is, yeah. And we've probably played half of these. And, yeah, I think going back to the hype surrounding board games, I think Scythe might have eked this one out just due to all the hype, because there are quite a few good games in this list.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's definitely safe to say that all of those are good games.
Right.
I mean, they're Game of the Year contenders, so...
Well, I mean, Scythe's also in there.
Which is like a two-time Game of the Year winner now, but you know.
But not the real Game of the Year.
Best Board Game Production. The clear winner in this is Mechs vs. Minions. I mean, this is a video game company who just poured their heart and soul into making sure this was one of the best productions kind of ever created for a board game. And
no, that game is insane.
Yeah.
I've played that actually.
Have you?
And when the box was first pulled out, it's just massive. It's huge.
Right.
And there's so many things in it. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many minions.
Yeah.
And so few mechs, but they're cool.
I haven't gotten a chance to play it, but I have seen it. And I've heard it's really good. They had Tom Vassell and they had Quentin from Shut Up and Sit Down actually consult on that game. So they did it right.
Oh.
They did it right.
Well, that's debatable.
The,
at least one of those two people.
We're
maybe
not,
you should not have been
we're
on
not going to say who.
No, we can't.
Best cooperative game.
I was so fixing Steven? To step yeah. on that joke again.
Steven?
Best cooperative game of the year, Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. And I've kind of got a bone to pick on this one because... This is the second edition of Mansions of Madness. It's basically the same game, only with an app that controls a lot of the navigation and interface. And then we've got Pandemic, Reign of Cthulhu on this list as well. Just, again, a re-implementation of an existing game. I feel like Arkham Horror, the card game, kind of got the s*** on this one. Because, again...
Are we allowed to say s***?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just check.
You should bleep it out just to be safe.
I will. Oh, yeah. Send me that squeaky toy
yeah.
sound.
But, I mean, Arkham Horror is innovative in the way that it had been implemented. It's a fantastic cooperative game. It's different than anything else I had played. I'm a little bit bewildered at this one, but people like their... They're madness.
Yeah. Madness?
I guess I'm just a little bitter about the fact that this is a game that already existed that just got a second printing
yeah.
and then won the award. I don't know.
Sort of like art that already existed and then was grafted into a game that won the award.
Yeah.
If that ever happened.
I suppose you could say that, yeah.
My main question is, where's Arboretum in all this?
that's not even close to cooperative. We wish it was, but it's not.
I mean,
like in general,
right?
If it was in any category, let's skip to that part because I
don't think
hear about
it. I don't think it made any of the award lists at all. Cottage Garden didn't either. It's too bad. Best expansion for a game. Invaders from Afar was nominated. As well as two Time Story expansions, but Seven Wonders Duel Pantheon
wow.
ended up winning.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it must be good to beat out two Time Stories.
Must be.
Expansions.
I mean, everyone loves Seven Wonders Duel,
right.
so just such a
right.
great game.
Right. Just making something awesome even better. Best Family Game, Ice Cool. Again, this one, the Spiel Award for children's game.
Mm-hmm. Just copying the Germans.
Right. We've got best game from a new designer, Terraforming Mars.
Which is criminal to relegate it to this category.
Well, I mean, it's a good one to win. Is it? If this is your first
no,
game,
I mean,
it's...
There's no way that this game couldn't win in this category.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Vast was nominated as well, and Vast is this crazy, super asymmetrical game that kind of changed the way that a lot of people thought about board gaming. So I guess in that way, it might have had a contender, but Terraforming
well,
Mars.
Well, and Seafall was in there too, right? Because Rob Davio's pretty new.
Similarly, best game from small publisher, Role Player. I am not familiar with Role Player, but winning that award. Ah, here we go. Cottage Garden was nominated.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you mad about this one too?
Well, I mean...
Because Not Alone didn't
small
win.
Publisher. I don't know.
He doesn't care about the small
no,
ones.
No. You want to win the big ones.
Wait, who publishes? He self-published Cottage Garden, but the rest right, of them are
yeah.
through.
Out of his garage, yeah.
Yeah, he was just, he really wanted this award this year. Yep. And again, got...
That's right, he's already won all the other awards at least once. Okay, we're getting close. Best party game, Captain Sonar, the submarine team chasing game, beating out Secret Hitler. And
which is crazy.
Codenames Pictures. Interesting.
Seth,
I can
contain yourself.
Beating Codenames Pictures. Look, all right, I am an avid supporter of Hitler, the game. And
good grief.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And good also, grief. I mean, I play with a group who brings Captain Sonar, like, every mm-hmm. week. But we always play Secret Hitler. We never play Captain Sonar, so it must not be as good. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's just...
That's completely anecdotal evidence, but I'm going to stand by it.
The thing is like, Captain Sonar seems like a more involved game. Yeah.
Agreed. Which is why it can't be the best party game, because you don't want as involved right. party games. You can't break them out as often with as many
right.
people.
I kind of agree with you.
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Seth and Adam agreeing with each other.
Yeah, I was ready to defend myself, and then...
We are unified over just the outrage of Captain Sonar being a party game.
Dude, I had just grabbed...
Hitler brings people together.
It's so true. I had just grabbed my popcorn, even, because I was waiting for an argument between you two. And then it just fizzled out.
Secret Hitler.
No, I haven't played Captain Sonar, but it does look really cool. Mm-hmm. So I'll give it that.
And I don't know that we mentioned Secret Hitler is a print and play. So if you don't want to shell out the $35, $40, I mean, you can go print and play and try it. And then once you fall in love with it, that's right.
And then
right.
buy it. Because it is good and it's worth getting the cool components.
Right. Best reprint, Mansions of Madness, second edition. Best strategy game, Terraforming Mars.
All right, how many awards are there?
There are so many.
All right. Tom Vassell, you cannot
there are three left. best theming, Captain Sonar. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Seafall making an appearance in this category. Best two-player game, Star Wars.
Arboretum?
Rebellion.
Oh.
No, Star Wars Rebellion.
Even.
And most innovative game, Captain Sonar, once again. Taking
wow.
that award. This is
wow.
actually...
Beating out Vast.
Yeah. You know, I've heard Vast is different, and it is a game changer, but I've heard that people really enjoy Captain Sonar, and I really want to play it. It's just like, I hear you need six people to just make it the best experience. And it's hard to get six people together and then teach them the rules and...
You know, it's a lot easier with Secret Hitler.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Nice. So solid. I was going to make that same exact joke. That was amazing.
You're welcome. Here's the little fun fact from earlier that I okay. think Seth will really appreciate.
Right.
Going all the way back to Game of the Year.
Mm-hmm. The very first one.
You mentioned that... Yep, mentioned that Terraforming Mars was in that category.
That's
yes?
right, yep.
I mean, I can barely remember because it was like 45 minutes ago when
yeah.
we talked about this.
It was a while back.
Hey, you can't say that. It's going to be edited. Say 20.
I looked it up and... Okay, fine, here. It was at least 20 minutes away. There you go. And Scythe is listed as having the overall rank of 8 on BoardGameGeek. And Terraforming Mars... has an overall rank of 7.
Wow.
What?
So it barely edged out Scythe on their little chart.
But indicative of how much better Terraforming Mars is.
Just worlds better.
Worlds better. Planets better.
The funny thing is it even has like a 0.1 better score in the community breakdown as well.
Hmm.
The average rating. And the wow. complexity... is a difference of 3.32 and 3.36.
The easier the game is, the better. Confirmed.
It has an average play time that is 5 minutes longer than Scythe.
Okay. Wait, just serious compare and contrast here.
I'm trying to cut all of this.
You totally can. Dude, the age of Scythe is 14 and up. And for Terraforming Mars, it's 12 and up. So, I mean, Terraforming Mars, hand down, clear-cut winner. and I even like Side, but right. What is this?
Right.
Oh, man.
Well, those are the Dice Tower Award winners. Quite a handful there. If you want to listen to those awards being doled out, check out the Dice Tower podcast. We've got some spotlights. I want to talk about some
games. Spotlight.
With That's you cool. Guys. We bought lights.
Spotlights.
We did.
Games we haven't played yet, but ones that I want to shine a little bit of light on for various reasons. Not necessarily because these are the best games out there, but they are ones that, I was perusing Board Game Geek, caught my interest. The first one I want to talk about is Outlive. This is another post-apocalyptic survival game. So in Outlive, players have 6 turns to gather resources, kind of avoid some of the threats that are happening in the kind of region in which they're living. And it's interesting because there are day and night phases, and you do different things during the day as opposed to the night. And this game, I think more than the other post-apocalyptic games that I've seen, caught my eye because it feels to me, just in kind of reading the description, looking at a few written reviews and looking at the components, it just feels like this is a game that you could sink your teeth into in terms of like actually feeling like you are a survivor in a post-apocalyptic world, and you're actually building something. You're adding rooms to where you're living. You're gathering resources. You're gathering people to join your little colony, and it just looked fun and maybe less competitive.
Yeah.
Than some of the others. Arctic Scavengers kind of has a vibe like this, but it's a deck building game and certainly very competitive, but this one looks a little bit more chill, but still has a little bit of an edge.
I gotta say, on first glance and hearing all about it, it definitely reminds me of Dead of Winter, of just moving around your characters that you have,
right,
collecting items, collecting resources, and then that time limit that's you have to complete your objective before either the turns or your morale runs out. Right. What do you think about that, Steven?
I first thought of Dead of Winter as well, and then it also reminded me very slightly something about the character cards and portraits was reminiscent of Zombie 15.
Oh, 100%. I agree.
I mean, this one looks interesting. It looks maybe more accessible than a Dead of Winter or an Arctic Scavengers because I think the characters are probably a little more accessible. You're not fighting zombies. You're living in the real world and just trying to survive, get by, and build your colony up as best you can.
I do think it's an interesting theme for a post-apocalyptic game that hasn't really been played out very often. Everything almost always is, you know, zombies and things of that nature. You know, Arctic Scavengers brought in a big giant blizzard event.
Right.
And there have been different takes, but this one, it's kind of refreshing in a way that it's simply, dude, nature is just
right
overgrown the civilization of man. You're like, oh yeah, okay, wow, that's pretty interesting.
But and you look at the board and it doesn't look threatening at all. It certainly looks like something has happened to the world, but you know, there's an amusement park that's a little bit decrepit. A fallen
I find
bridge.
Amusement parks extremely threatening.
Okay, well, threatening maybe not to most.
There's also a wrecked. There's also a wrecked cargo ship and an open pit mine. This is terrifying.
Those are like 3 out of 5 of my top worst fears.
There's just an empty forest in the corner. A military base.
Okay, abandoned dams. Ooh man, that's rough.
Wow,
for me. That's rough for me.
Adam,
I have nightmares about this.
I can't handle this.
But it's it's depicted during the day. It. It's got a warm tone to it.
Well, what about the night phase?
It's you flip the board over.
You flip the board right, over.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Yes.
Dump all the tokens. Dude, that's a great idea.
So, yeah, this is one maybe to look at if you are a Dead of Winter fan. And maybe you have had trouble getting some of your friends into the zombie theme. This one might fill that niche for you. The second spotlight I want to look at tonight is a game called Deep Space D6.
Oh, yeah, Star Trek.
Well, kind of. You are in deep space. Something has gone wrong on your craft, and it is up to you and your crew to make sure that you take care of the threat and basically just try and survive the catastrophe. The interesting thing about this one is that this is just a one-player game, and I don't think we have ever talked about a solitaire game.
That is crazy.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I wanted to kind of spotlight this, is because there are a lot of solitary games out there that are very good, and many of them, like this one, are print and play. So you can go to Board Game Geek, you can go to Deep Space D6, and there will be a link there to print out your very own version of this. You can also purchase a production copy as well. But this is one that jumped onto the hotness list for a little while, and it just looked interesting.
Yeah, this game is perfect for me because I don't have any friends or money, so the fact that I can print it and then play it by myself is perfect.
There you go. There you go.
This game does actually look really cool. Mm-hmm. All the images of the cards and the boards, like the, you know, the various ships you can use and things.
Right.
They're so clean.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're actually very plain, all things considered, but they just look very neat and clean and like, boom, there you go.
Right.
We don't have to be fancy because this is space, by God.
Right.
You're surviving just the hairs of your chinny chin chin.
That's right. It's all about efficiency out there in the void. And the other thing about print and play games is that the rules can be updated frequently, and I think the rules for the luck mechanics kind of surrounding the dice in this game have been updated a few times, so the games get better and you don't have to buy a brand new game necessarily to update your rule set. And I know Seth was being a little tongue-in-cheek about these being kind of good games for people who aren't able to get together with others who don't have a lot of money, but if you're someone who doesn't have board game enthusiasts in your life yet, I mean, this is a good way to get your game fix, and you don't need other people to do it necessarily. So I don't know, Steven, maybe even where you are, where people don't play a lot of board games necessarily.
Wow.
Man, if you want to get your fix, solitaire games might be
maybe
good
even
option.
You, Steven. No. While you're down there by yourself starving to death in Wyoming. But for reals though, this game actually does look pretty cool and I would be interested in playing it.
Yeah.
So I might
let's
invest
all play
in it
a
little bit.
We should all play it and then report back.
Yeah.
We should all meet up. When Seth and I turn 30, we should sit in a circle.
So next year.
And play. Yeah, exactly. And play this game individually, but at the same table in a circle.
Right.
So it's almost like we each have our own ship in the same fleet, and the whole fleet has encountered like a huge asteroid storm, and we have to get through it together, man. We can totally mod this game.
Yeah.
And we could only do that because we would be 30 at that time and mature enough to mod a solitary dice game.
I was wondering how it was going to work, but that makes sense now. Another thing we can do is we can all, every 60 seconds, rotate to the other person's games and try and pick it up from there, simulating our minds being scrambled by alien contact.
Dude, that's perfect. Or, better yet, each one of us is actually represented by a symbol on the dice. So when someone rolls it, we are the ones who move around.
Nice. I like it. And I guess for the last spotlight, we're going to talk about a game called High Tide.
Which, save the best for last.
So true.
Which, you know, doesn't really have that high of a ranking, but I just thought the theme...
Yeah, which, if we're being honest, looks like... It,
oh, bravo. Bravo. I wish I had used that.
No, that does seem like a joke you would say. I agree. Just because you like talking about though, that's the only reason.
I do love
All right, we're going to have to bleep all that out, which is going to be perfect.
So anyways, High Tide.
I think this one...
It's high...
It was serendipitous because I have just gotten back from the ocean and I saw this game and I thought the theming was just a lot of fun and different. So this is a game where each person is trying to get their deck chair closer to the ocean without it being swallowed by the tide. I mean, the artwork is simple, but I just thought this was a fun theme, and I thought it was clever, and I thought the use of the tiling as the high tide coming in kind of randomly, reaching up further in some parts of the beach than others was just really, it just looks fun. Maybe not the best game ever, but...
No, it definitely actually looks really, really cute of a game. All these little chairs, all those little ocean tiles.
Right. Yeah. I think we need to play this somewhere in the sand, under an umbrella, sipping some sort of fruity drink.
I was going to say we need to play this in a kiddie pool, but
yeah, we can do that.
That works too.
We could do both. We could do both.
Yeah.
We can bring a kiddie pool to the ocean.
We're sitting in a kiddie pool on the beach.
Exactly. Yeah. Dude, when you're 30, you can do that kind of stuff.
I love the fact that they have that the game pieces, though, are just the deck chairs.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
Those are actually, I love that. The little 3D deck chairs sitting on the beach. And the fact that you can even have the little tiles that are kind of like beach towels, right. And there's flip flops and stuff. It's just, man.
And it comes with a little.
Freaking adorable.
It is. It comes with a little shark expansion, too.
What?
I'm not sure what that's about.
I'm afraid of sharks.
I was going to say, it takes a serious turn for the terrifying when that happens.
Yep,
but...
Okay, can't play this game anymore.
It's the expansion, so you don't have to use it. But
okay, good.
The age is 8 and up, but with the expansion, it's like 25 and up.
I don't know. Here, and maybe you guys feel the same way, but this is where I'm at in my board game life these days. Like, life is...
You just want to have fun.
I do.
Is this a transition to the board game point of view segment?
I think it is. I think in just my time of life, it's just been busy. And when I sit down to play a board game, I find myself reaching for the lighter fare. Things that are silly. If I'm playing with people, things that I can teach quickly. I don't have the mental capacity right now to sit down with an involved game to learn in-depth rule sets and try and teach them to other people. So something like High Tide, I look at this and I'm just immediately drawn to it because it looks silly and fun and it just looks simple and cute and something that I could get just about anybody to play. So that's kind of where I'm at in my life right now.
This does look like a game, like you're saying, that you could just sit down and teach. And, you know, that's kind of our mission here at Board Game Point of View. Like, you know, we love playing the good games, the complex games, but it's all about the people. And if you have games that you can teach people quickly that are fun and engaging instantly,
right?
You got to bring those ones out because that's what it's about.
That's right. And
I do enjoy the fact that you said we enjoy playing the good games and the complex games and then said... Basically, that we take the bad games and the simple games to the community.
That's
for the people.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. Yeah, no. Oh, we don't play good games with plebeians.
Well,
they don't, they're not worthy of it.
Well, exactly.
And I think the other thing about this and other games like this that are kind of based on just very, I don't know, typical events that happen throughout the course of a day, people know, you know, what sitting on the beach looks like, and they know how the waves roll in, and they can get, they can understand that right away. And then you just throw in the little wooden beach chairs, and I think you're selling your audience just immediately on something like this.
Well, I mean, yeah, I would agree that they're very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even good old cottage garden.
Right.
What? None of us has owned a cottage, and hardly any of us care about gardening.
I'm not saying us. I'm saying
there are people out there who are
huge gardeners, I'm sure. So a game about gardening is probably like one of the greatest things in the world to them, right next to actually gardening. And so it's funny. Yeah, these really down-to-earth, very kind of realistic, I guess you could say, simple themed everyday kind of games are probably super accessible and appealing to a wide variety of people. That's why really what I'm trying to get at, except I didn't really even hint at this at all, but what I'm getting to now,
we'll cut all that and then just make your point.
Exactly. Really, the greatest game of all time is the game of life. High Tide and Cottage Garden and any other game that's very relatable and very everyday and simple are basically just expansions to the game of life when you think about it.
Well said.
And I appreciate
that. Well said. Well said.
Yeah. We've also got some Kickstarter news. We've got a Kickstarter kind of making waves, and that is Founders of Gloomhaven. This is a game set in the same universe as Gloomhaven, which was also a Kickstarter success. But this one in particular piqued my interest, not only because of the hype that it's getting. In just a few days, it's already reached over 300,000 in its pledges on Kickstarter. But this game looks like it's getting close to something like an Age of Empire, where you are developing and growing a civilization that is unique to you, and just kind of letting that play out over time, as well as interacting with the other civilizations also found within kind of the same region as you. And it looks like there's a little asymmetry in terms of how each culture plays out. Looks like you can update buildings. And it looks like there's a little bit of conflict, but I don't know that that is kind of the driving force for this game. It looks very Euro-ish. But yeah, it caught my eye initially because of kind of the funding that it's received thus far, but it does look like a quality production, and maybe, like I said, a pretty strong implementation of something like an Age of Empire.
You know, we just talked about how much we love those simple, elegant, easy games.
Yeah.
And this does not look like that.
No, it does not. This one is very involved and probably will take a few plays before you really can sink your teeth into it. But I have been on the lookout for an Age of Empire style game.
I also actually played a lot of Age of Empires and even some earlier Total War games when I was younger. And that whole classic civilization expansion, you know, managing cities, you have different characters, resources, all that stuff. But I also agree with what Seth said, and scrolling through here, it looks rather complex, and the vast array of components it comes with is pretty daunting. I mean, I am the one who also got Scythe, which has tons of stuff in it as well, so hey.
I mean, there are those weekends or evenings where you do want something a little heavier when you've got a little bit more mental space. So, I mean, we do have these games in our collections. I've got quite a few of them, actually. I just haven't been playing them as often.
One of the best things that I've seen about this Kickstarter, though, is that it has a tabletop simulator sponsored like mod for it, so you can try it out and play it before you actually buy it.
Well, it's always nice when they do that, and more board games are doing that on the tabletop simulator. And I think those that do have a little bit more success. And yeah, if you're ambitious enough too, you can print and play this as well.
Yeah. Which seems like way too much effort. Get the digital version. Probably costs less to buy a tabletop simulator than the ink needed to print this game. Anyways, that's just, it's cool that, like you're saying, developers are doing this because it's a great way to reach out to people who will want to play it, to get feedback, and just a medium where people can play games with their friends.
Right.
Even if they're not in the same states.
Yeah. I think you are really making your case for us to pick up the tabletop simulator, I think is what's happening. Well, I think we're going to wrap the podcast up with a review from Seth, because he is the only one that has played this game. This is the popular area control game that was also nominated for a few awards in the Dice Tower. This is Inish. The first thing I want to ask you, Seth, I think most people that listen to board game podcasts are familiar with Inish. Right, yeah. The modular tiles in this game just fascinate me.
They're crazy. I don't know how they work, but they tessellate, and it blows my mind every time I see it. And it takes at least three tries for me to put them out.
Right? Because they're not hexagons or squares. They're these very kind of wiggly, abstract, three-noduled shapes. I don't know.
No, it's crazy. I completely agree. And I don't know how it works.
Okay.
I'm also not a geometrician, so it's not really my area. No, but it's really cool, and it adds a very cool vibe to the game.
Right.
As far as the art style goes, as far as these overlapping areas. And, I mean, if this game was just triangles, it would really not be as exciting, I think, as the tiles the way they are.
I think most of us are familiar with pretty standard area control games. But what is Inish doing that is different than standard area control fare?
Well, I haven't played a whole lot of good area control games. So as far as what it's doing differently than the norm, I'm not sure. But there's a lot of really cool elements to it. One of them is that your actions are almost solely comprised of cards that you draft every round. So every round you are doing something different, potentially. And every round you can choose to try and do something different depending on the cards that you can draft and pass to the other player. So there are actions that let you move, that let you attack, that give you the access to place certain structures on the board. And then all of those other actions related to those things that either do above and beyond or slightly different. And so you have choices every turn about what sort of condition you want to pursue. And there are three different win conditions in this game. It's either controlling a lot of land or controlling some specific structures that you can build, or controlling the most people as far as you're actually the chieftain over other players' tribes, which is crazy. Because in this game, you can share tiles with other people without fighting. Now, when you move into someone's space, you can elect to fight them, or you can elect to have peace and just both share it. But whoever has the most there is the chieftain, gets more benefits, and like I said, can win the game by lording over six of the other players' people. And again, the way you're getting these people out, moving them around, is all based on the cards that you're drafting for that round. So there is an element to where maybe there's something you want to do, but your opponents can save that card for their own hand, and you'll have to wait and find some other way to accomplish your goal. And that's super cool. Also, every different tile you control has a different special ability on it, which you can use if you are the chieftain. So there's a whole bunch of different things happening at once, but at its core, there are like maybe four different mechanics that you're really using. So it's not a complex game.
Right.
But it all comes together to be a very strategic and sort of heady area control experience. And it was awesome. It took me, I played it once and it took me the whole game to figure out how it worked. As far as like, I knew the mechanics, I was doing stuff, but I was like, oh wait, I shouldn't have just done that because I could have waited and played my card here and done this. Mm-hmm. But there was similar, I think, to a lot of games we play. It just kept opening up possibilities for how this game could be better and better and better.
Right.
And so all of these elements come together to make a really tight and, again, pretty quick for the complexity of the game or the strategy. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, I know it it does get compared to other Matigo games like Cyclades and Kemet. You've played Kemet. Mm-hmm. Do you play Inish over Kemet necessarily?
Yes.
Would you? Okay.
100%. 100%.
Wow.
Kemet is great, but like we talked about, there's so much to it.
Right.
Like one of the main things about that game is that there are 90, okay, that's maybe exaggerating, but there are like 90 unique tiles that have different abilities that you have to know, and you have to lay them all out, and it's just, it's a long, long slog of a game.
Right.
It's fun, and it's good for area control, but Inish is just so elegant, and I think above all else, I love the very quick, fast, easy games, but the elegance, I think, can make or break a game.
Right.
And so if it's complex but still easy to understand and easy to get to that strategy, and I think Inish has got that.
I have heard a lot of good things about this game, and I am intrigued by kind of the notion of combat in this game. It's kind of...
Oh, yeah.
It's from what I've heard, it's something to the effect of you kind of fight until you don't want to fight anymore and you're just kind of done, and it may not even be to your benefit to remove units from the board, because like you said, you may be able to be the chieftain over those particular units. So it's really intriguing.
It is. The way the combat works is when you enter into another person's territory or play a specific action card to attack things in your own territory, you take turns with the other players in the territory, and this could be up to all four players of the game taking turns, fighting each other, taking actions which are either attacking, which is if you attack someone, they have to either discard one of their units or an action card from their hand, or you can withdraw your troops, or you can play some of the heroic abilities, heroic ability cards. But the thing about this is that there are a whole bunch of other cards that you can play after you've taken a maneuver, is what they're called, to either attack or something, that can completely change the game. So after you remove someone's unit, you can play the Bard, which then allows you to draw that heroic ability card. I don't know what that's called. I'll have to edit that in later. I don't know. But you can draw these abilities, which then you can use in that same combat. Or there are cards that you can play that will just boost your troops as you're fighting to completely turn the tables on someone, which happened to me. It's pretty rough. But it's just, like you said, cycles. So you can defeat one of your opponent's units, play your card to claim a reward that you want, and then just back out. And that's perfectly valid, and that can work, and that can help you win the game. Because some of the best things you can get in this game are these, like, I don't know what they're called, but they're like bardic tokens, where they count as one for the purpose of any victory condition. So whether that's controlling land, controlling people's units, or controlling structures, you may only have to control five of those things and have this one token, or however many you can get, which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like a wild card for victory conditions. That's pretty cool.
It's crazy, but it's not broken because you have to fight these battles strategically to claim these things. So all in all, it's very, very give and take, and there are turns where you'll attack someone and win, but then the next player in turn will attack you and take something, but then the next player will play this card that will push your units out of his space but back into the place you wanted to be. So all of these things can happen, and it's just a lot of fun.
No, that sounds really cool. I also have to be and point out that the little miniatures are pretty sweet. Yeah, I really like the overall look of this game. Not only those insane tiles you guys mentioned early on, but combine that with the miniatures and also even just like the tokens and other components, it all looks really nice. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, though, to me, none of it blends well with the actual cover, the actual box.
Interesting.
Of the game, but...
Yeah. No, it's... I mean, the artwork is definitely eye-catching, and it was nominated for Best Artwork as well in the Dice Tower Awards. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the first thing most people notice about this game is just the unique artwork. I really enjoy the styling of it because it is so different, and I think it's in keeping with kind of that culture.
I agree completely.
Yeah, yeah. Now...
That's sweet.
I think of the three of us, Steven is probably the most enthusiastic about area control. Seth, would you maybe suggest this one to Steven to add it to his collection? I don't know.
Steven, never play this game.
Okay, okay. That checks out. No.
But if you like the idea of area control, that's also a little bit of like worker placement.
Uh-huh.
A little bit. I think you'll like Inish, so. Anything beats Risk in the area control department.
Nah. Dude, here's the thing, though. Risk started it all, okay? And every now and then, you gotta go back and appreciate where you came from.
That's right. So true. And you know what? That leads us right into the board game point of view segment.
What?
Because that's a valuable lesson that Steven learned from board games. That's it.
And if you want to know the history on Risk, you can run back in the board game point of view catalog. And Seth and I actually did an episode outlining the history of Clue, Monopoly, and Risk. That was real early on, I have to say.
Yeah, wow.
The fact that you guys waited for me to be gone to go over the history of Risk, one of my favorite games, seems sort of criminal. But
well, hindsight's 20/20.
I'm okay.
Well,
that was a great decision,
okay,
Adam. I did not realize how good that was.
We just wanted Steven to experience it with the rest of our audience. I mean, fresh and full of wonder.
Steven doesn't listen. What? I don't listen.
Yeah. I'll share my final thought. I'll bring us back up. I just ordered the Ducks and Penguins expansion for Happy Pigs. Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Ayo.
So now everybody who plays that game will have a different animal because I already have the first expansion. So it's going to be fun.
That's awesome.
Gentlemen, where can they play games with us during the week?
Subject to change.
That is true.
If you're in Bismarck, North Dakota, check out Parallax Computers and Games. They don't have any computers, but they got games. And on Wednesdays at 6:30, there is a 33% chance I'll be there for the next 2 weeks. And after that, well, you're out of luck.
Well, people can always find me at the Billings Vineyard Sunday morning. And I am always ready to play. Like I said, I have accrued quite a collection, probably stretching into the 130 range at this point.
Ooh.
And I think I've got 12 to 15 games loaned out to friends right now, and they're just sitting in my closet waiting to be played. So, Sunday mornings. You can also hit us up on Twitter or our website at bgpov.com. We also have some videos on YouTube.
Okay, well...
Join us again soon for episode 49. We've almost reached 50, gentlemen. That's quite an achievement. Well, good night, everybody.
I hold you all in contempt.
Sustained.
Boom. I was going to do a horrible, horrible transition into the next segment.
Uh-huh.
And then I just chickened out.
Let's hear it.
Yeah. It didn't work.
No, it's too late.
We were talking about golf. And I was going to say, speaking of golf. But then I ruined my own, like, my own intro.
It's
because
okay.
I said, let's get back to golf. Anyways.
That's staying in.
Yes.
What?
Oh. It's just Hitler is undeniably enchanting. Adam rage quit.
Yeah.
Adam loves Exit so much.
Right.
Yeah.
And hates Terraforming Mars.
The truth comes out.
I'm leaving that in.
You can treat your ears to even more, Tom Vassell.
All right, say that again, but better.
Say it again, but better. Okay. You can
the power of the editor.
I'm just gonna say, you can treat your ears to more of Tom's.
Okay.
I don't know. You could
more of Tom's right. Silky
that I come
smooth
from
voice.
With, yeah. Oh my
right.
God! Whoa!
You could treat your ears to more of Tom Vassell,
the man, the myth, the
right.
legend.
Our boss.
Right.
Our boss.
We gotta butter him up.
Forever in our hearts. May he rest in peace. Amen. Okay, moving on.
I have to go to the bathroom really fast.
Okay.
So it's a good thing we don't record these live, am I right?
Yeah, I'm
anyways,
keeping that in.
You should. I don't care.
It's going in at the end.